When you're ready to put your plan into action, you're going to need to do a little personal health inventory, both to determine your degree of risk for these insulin-related problems and the level of intervention that will be necessary to correct them. We've designed two levels of intervention on the Protein Power Plan. Phase 1 intervention is the starting point for everyone, at least for the first few days. Remember that we said that the most effective way to control insulin is to cut the legs out from under it quickly and then to slowly release your hold. That is, to move on to phase 2 and then finally into maintenance. People who need to lose a lot of weight, a significant amount of weight, more than 20% of their total weight, or who have medical problems such as high blood pressure, diabetes, elevated cholesterol, or triglycerides, regardless of what they weigh, should stay in phase 1 until they've solidly settled into that corrective momentum. And then they can slide up into phase 2. So everyone will begin with phase 1 and slide up to phase 2 at different points.
Now let me insert a word of caution here. This program is extremely powerful, really powerful, and if you have any of the medical problems related to insulin and you're currently taking medications for them, for instance, if you have high blood pressure or diabetes and you currently take blood pressure or blood sugar lowering medications, do not begin this plan without the guidance of your physician. Now, in our office, we take people off these medications when they start this program because it works so effectively and so quickly in correcting these problems. But we're physicians, and these patients do it under our supervision, and you need to be under a physician's supervision because not all medications work the same. This program works so well that if you couple it with your medications, you could real easily get into trouble. And you also shouldn't go off your medications on your own because some of these medications need to be tapered slowly to prevent serious side effects. With the help and guidance of your own doctor, however, you should be able to come off of many, if not all, of the costly medications you're currently taking and let the food that you eat in your diet keep you healthy.
In the Protein Power Workbook, you'll find a letter that's written directly to your physician that will help to explain in sort of doctor-to-doctor terms what it is you're trying to do and how they can help you do that. So don't try to intervene without your doctor's help. Now, if you have blood pressure or cholesterol problems or maybe borderline diabetes and you're not currently on medication, and that doesn't mean that you were on medicine but you stopped it yesterday on your own. I mean, if you're really not using medicine to control these problems, then you don't have to worry about beginning the intervention safely.
But just to play it safe, you probably ought to know where you're starting. And if you haven't had one recently, get a complete physical examination. Find out your insulin, cholesterol, triglycerides, blood sugar, and potassium levels. Get a blood pressure reading. Make sure your kidneys and liver are working well and that your heart rhythm is normal. You really need to know where you're starting to appreciate the correction you're making. We've outlined in the workbook a series of blood tests and other evaluations that you would be very wise to have before you begin this nutritional switch or really any other life-changing program.
But once you've got a bead on your general state of health, it's time to make the specific determinations of what your nutritional requirements will be to make this change. The first and most crucial need your body is going to have will be for protein, enough good quality protein to support your lean tissues. To know how much protein that is, you've got to have some idea of how many pounds of lean body you've got to support.
And you're going to have to do a few simple calculations. Now, they'll take you just a few minutes, and we explain them in detail here. It's very easy, and it's important for your success on the program. So if you're listening to this tape in your car, you may just want to do so as an overview and then listen again at home as you do your calculations. Because to put this information to use, you're going to need to be in some spot where you've got a tape measure, a pencil in your Protein Power workbook, and a scale to weigh on.
Okay, now let's get started. First, you should compute your waist-to-hip ratio. Now that's an important ratio because it helps to determine where you store your fat. And that's really important to know since fat's not as great a health hazard if you store it mainly in your hips and legs as opposed to around your middle. In the Protein Power Workbook, you're going to find a worksheet there to do this calculation. You want to make each of the measurements there three times and take an average of those three readings to get the most accurate measure possible. You're going to want to make these measurements dressed only in your undergarments or nothing at all if you're at home. With the tape level and snug against your skin, not pulled tightly, measure your waist at the level of your belly button and record that reading in inches. Do that again two more times. And now add those numbers up and divide by three, or take an average. If you're like me, and by relying on a calculator you've become simple math impaired, a cheap hand calculator could really speed this operation up.
An important point to add is to measure at the level of your belly button, not the thinnest part of your waist. Many people measure at the thinnest part of their waist, or they measure where their belt would go. Measure at the belly button, at the umbilicus, to make these measurements correct. Now let's turn to your hips. You want to measure them at their widest point. Now that may take a little jittering up and scrunching down of the tape measure until you get the biggest number of inches, and that's going to be the widest point, and that's what you want.
Now making these measurements, be brutally honest. You're looking here for reliable information, and no one but you will know the numbers. So don't fudge on them no matter what.
Now once you've found your number at the hip, record it, and then repeat that operation two more times, add the numbers up, divide by three, and you're almost there. And now you're ready to get that waist-hip ratio. Now this one's really easy. You just take your average waist measurement, the one you got by dividing by three, and divide it by the average hip measurement.
Okay, now check that number against the table that's called waist-to-hip ratios in the workbook. If you're a woman and your ratio is over 0.8, then you have what we call an abdominal fat pattern. That means you tend to lay fat down in the middle. And this pattern is a double-edged sword. You'll lose abdominal fat quickly, but having fat there is a more dangerous fat to begin with. You can repeat this measurement and recalculate your waist-to-hip measurement as you go through the plan. And that can be a benchmark of how well you're doing.
Because you should find that it decreases as you follow the protein power plan. So now let's look at the lean body calculations.
This is where you're going to find out your protein requirements. And the calculation will be different depending on your gender. There are two separate worksheets in the workbook to help you.
Now, if you have access to it, really, the easiest way of all is to get your body composition done by a reliable machine, a bioimpedance computer, or by the underwater weighing method. Sometimes physicians in your area or health clubs or gyms may have one of these bioimpedance analyzers, and these machines give good, reproducible results. And if you do contact such a place and they tell you they use fat calipers or some other type of gadgetry, beware. The results may not be accurate or reproducible and can vary widely depending upon who's operating the equipment. We ordered a pair of fat calipers for our own clinic, and we let everyone in the clinic try it, all of our nurses and our dietitians, and we tried it ourselves, and no one got the same answers. So it's difficult to get accurate, reproducible results with fat calipers. At least that's what we've found.
But you know, it's really easy to calculate your own lean body mass. The method that we used in our clinic prior to getting the fancy machine that we have now is this one. And so first, we're going to compute fat percentage. Okay, women, you'll want to refer in the workbook to a sheet called Body Composition Worksheet for Women.
And men, you can use the worksheet called Body Composition Worksheet for Men.
Let's start with the ladies first. Measure your height in inches. If your tape measure doesn't go that high, use it to measure about 2 feet up from the floor and put a mark there. And then tack the zero end of your tape measure right there and pull it up smoothly against the wall. And now pin or tack it to attach it to the wall. Then you can stand against it and place a ruler or a book or a stiff piece of cardboard level on your head to see where it hits the tape measure. Now you want to add back in those other 2 feet. That's 24 inches. Add those inches back to this number of inches and you'll have your height in inches. Record that in your worksheet.
And it's really, really important to actually measure your height. Don't just guess or estimate. We ask patients all the time when they come to our clinic what their height is, and then we measure it. And you would be amazed to see the discrepancy. Most people overestimate their height by an inch or an inch and a half, or sometimes even 2 inches, because as we age, unfortunately, we settle a little bit. But we still tend to think of ourselves as tall as we were when we were in our absolute prime. So always remember to actually measure your height and don't just put down what you think it is if you really want accurate figures. Now, take those waist and hip numbers that you calculated just a little bit ago and fill those in for the average number for hips and abdomen. You should now have an average number for hips, an average number for abdomen, which, remember, is your waist at the widest point and your height filled in on the top.
Okay, now you'll want to turn to a chart called Female Calculation Constants. You'll see across the top there are the words hips, abdomen, and height with columns of numbers beneath them. See them there? Okay, take your hip measurement and scan down that left-hand column below the word inches until you find the inch number of your hip measurement.
Now, if your measurement isn't on the table, if it's bigger than 60 inches, just use the number for 60.
And look just to the right of your inch measurement. You'll see another number. For example, across from 45 inches is the number 54.53. Find your inch number and record constant A on your worksheet as the number that comes to its right. Now take your waist or your abdominal measurement, and again, scan down the inches column below abdomen until you find that number.
And again, if it's larger than 50, just use 50.
Once you find your inches, look just to the right, and you'll find another number. Record that number as constant B on your worksheet. Now add these two constants, A and B, together, as it shows in the workbook. Have you got it? Okay. Now, take your height, and again in the chart, scan down the inch column under height until you find your height in inches.
Now, if you happen to be over 85 inches tall, you have a career in the NBA because that's 7 feet and 1 inch, and most women won't be taller than that. But if you are, just use 85 inches.
Okay. When you find your number of inches, again, look to the right of it where you'll find yet another number. Record that number on your worksheet as constant C, just as it's shown.
Okay, now for some simple math. You need to simply subtract constant C from the total you got by adding A and B, and voila, the number that you just calculated is your percent body fat.
Hang on to that number. You're going to need it in just a moment to calculate your lean percentage and your lean body weight in pounds. To do that, you're going to need an accurate weight. So now hop on the scale and weigh while we turn to the men.
And again, don't just guess your weight. Actually, get on the scale and weigh. Okay, now for the men. You're going to need to turn to the worksheet called Body Composition Worksheet for Men. And for your calculation, you'll also need to weigh. Not just guess, but actually weigh. So head for the scale. Now, the most accurate weight will be the first thing in the morning after you've emptied your bladder, but before you've had your coffee. If you can manage that, great. If not, just weigh now and record the weight in your worksheet.
Okay, now the next step is to take the tape measure. A soft cloth one usually works best because it's flexible. Take that tape measure and measure your wrist in inches. Again, keep the tape snug against your skin, but don't pinch. Measure right where your wrist bends, right between your wrist bone and your hand. Record that number of inches, and then repeat the measurement two more times. Once again, add the three measurements up and divide by three to get an average wrist measurement. You should have already calculated your average waist measurement when you calculated earlier for waist to hip ratio. Enter that average number now on your worksheet as well.
Now subtract your wrist measurement from the waist or abdominal measurement and enter that number as shown on the worksheet.
And you got it? Okay. Now, take that waist minus wrist number that you just calculated and turn to the table called Male Calculation Constants. You'll see across the top of the table the notation of waist minus wrist, followed by a series of numbers that begin with 22 and increase across the page in half-inch increments ending at 31. Find your waist minus wrist number rounded to the closest number among these.
And again, if your number is greater than 50, just use 50 for your calculation.
Okay. Once you've found your column, take note of the far left side of the chart where it says weight in pounds, and it has readings going from 120 down to 300, going from the top to the bottom. Run down that column until you find your weight in pounds, or as close as you can come. Place your left index finger on that number. Now place your right index finger on your waist minus wrist number at the top of the page. Now bring the left finger toward the center and the right finger down the page, and where your two fingers collide, you've just found your body fat percentage.
Now both men and women can use their body fat percentage in the next step. You need to take your weight in pounds and multiply it by your fat percentage as a decimal.
For example, if your fat percentage were 38, multiply your weight in pounds by 0.38, and that will give you the weight of your fat.
In pounds. And since body weight is really composed of either lean weight, which is muscles, bones, organs, hair, skin, nails, or fat weight, all you have to do to get your lean weight is subtract. From your total weight in pounds, subtract the weight of your fat that you just calculated, and there's your lean body weight. For example, if your total weight in pounds is 200 pounds, and the fat weight you've calculated is 50 pounds, by subtracting this 50 pounds from the 200 pounds, that gives you a lean body weight of 150 pounds.
Now, it's this lean body weight that we think of as the vital core. And to our way of thinking, it's sacred. It's a precious gift that was handed down to you by millennia of human development. It's an heirloom that was put into your care, and you absolutely must take good care of it. You must feed it and water it and exercise it and nurture it. And its first and most important need is for protein to keep it strong and fit.
Each and every pound of that lean body tissue has to be fed protein in an amount that will replace the wear and tear on it, because there's definite wear and tear on it. It breaks down and turns over every day, and the harder you work the body, and the harder you work this lean body mass, the more protein you're going to need.
Now, refer to the listing of activity categories, such as sedentary, active, or athlete. Find the category there that best describes you. For example, if you're moderately active, that is, you exercise for 30 minutes or so, 2 or 3 days a week, you'll see a number there, 0.6. This number would represent the number of grams of protein that you have to provide to every pound of your lean tissue every day. You'll see that there's a little worksheet for calculations. Write in the number of pounds of lean body tissue that you have and multiply that number of pounds by your activity category number from the previous page.
This number is your protein requirement in grams. Now let's go back to our 200-pound example. If your total weight is 200 pounds and your fat weight is 50 pounds, by subtracting you determine that your lean body weight is 150 pounds. So let's say your factor is 0.6. 0.6 times 150 pounds gives you 90 grams. That means that if you were this example, you would need to have 90 grams of protein each and every day. You've got to provide your lean body with this much protein to keep it healthy and strong, and that's just a minimum. It's okay to have more, but you've got to have at least this amount, and this is the cornerstone of the entire protein power plan, this determination of protein intake, and actually fulfilling this protein intake each and every day.
It's going to be a little different for each individual person, so it's important that you know what you need. But armed with that new knowledge of the amount of protein you need, you'll be able to determine exact meal sizes that are right for you. In your workbook, there will be a section entitled Protein Serving Sizes, and there you'll find all the information you'll need to be able to determine the exact amount of protein to eat at each meal.
Okay, now it's time to begin your Protein Power Nutritional Plan. This plan will be customized to your unique needs so that you'll get the maximum benefit. You'll remember that we said food is four things, and it really is only four things. It's water, fat, protein, and carbohydrate. But of all those four things, the protein is far and away the most critical. So let's start there. How do you get the protein that you need? Well, protein comes from a variety of places. It comes from meat, which is a really, really broad category. That's everything that was ever alive. It includes both red meat and chicken, and fish and seafood, wild game. It's all meat to us. And when you eat meat, every ounce of lean meat that you eat is going to provide protein.
About 7 grams of protein per ounce, in fact.
Okay, so let's say that you had a lean body mass that demanded between 60 and 80 grams of protein every day. If you were going to fulfill that protein requirement spread all throughout the day, you'd end up having about 25, say 27 grams of protein at every meal. What would that mean as meat? Well, 27 divided by 7 is about 4, so it'd be about 4 ounces of meat per meal at a minimum. At a minimum, 4 ounces of meat or fish or poultry or seafood. So what if you wanted 6 ounces?
That'd be fine. You just have to have a minimum of at least 4.
To fulfill that requirement. Okay, if you want to use meat as a snack wouldn't have to be as big as a meal. A snack could maybe be a couple ounces of meat. So what if you had a couple of ounces of leftover meat from the night before? I think your favorite's cold chicken, right?
That's right. Cold chicken is my favorite.
So you have a leftover chicken leg in the refrigerator. Fine, that makes a great snack. And you can throw that in, because remember, your protein requirement is a minimum. If you want extra protein, that's fine. So, if you're only going to have meat, you'd have 4 ounces of meat 3 times a day and a snack thrown in, and that would make your protein requirement if you needed 80 grams or so a day. Well, what if you wanted to use eggs as your protein source? Maybe you didn't want to have meat as a meal. What if you want to have eggs as the meal?
Well, eggs are going to give you about 6 grams of protein each.
And that's if you use the whole egg. If you just use the egg white?
That's going to be about 3.6, so say 3.5 grams.
Okay, 3.5 grams. I had a big guy in the clinic just the other day. He's a bodybuilder, and he doesn't like the yolks of eggs. Now, I personally do, but he doesn't like the yolks of eggs, so he was trying to calculate how many egg whites it would take as a snack for him. And I think we calculated that it was 5 or 6 because he was just going to eat the whites. He was a really big guy. But the point is that you can use egg protein to fulfill your protein requirement as well. For example, if we're looking to fulfill, what did we say before, 27 grams of protein? Well, a 3-egg omelet. That would be, let's see, 18 grams. That's not going to be enough all by itself, and that's what you're going to get at most restaurants. But what could you do to get enough to fill that 27-gram need?
Well, you could have sausage with it, or you could have some Canadian bacon, say.
Or maybe you could chop up a little ham or put a little bit of cheese in it. You can increase the protein by doing those things. You could even put tofu in the omelet if you wanted to. So you could have a combination of meat and eggs, maybe even some dairy protein. You'll notice in the protein serving sizes that we've got figured for you in your workbook, if you scan through that chart, you'll see that eggs alone to fulfill a 27-gram per meal protein requirement would probably take you a couple of whole eggs and 4 whites. But if you want to add meat to it, you could have a couple of eggs, a couple of whites, and an ounce of some kind of meat at a minimum. If you wanted to combine cheese with that or tofu, those kind of calculations are easy to make. If you want to make a copy of your protein serving chart and tape it up to your refrigerator or fold it up and put it in your pocket to keep in your purse so it'll be with you wherever you go, that way you can become familiar with what it takes to fulfill your protein requirement out of whatever source happens to be available to you at the time.
And remember, this is just a minimum. If you go over that, it's no problem. A chicken breast, for example, weighs about 3.5 ounces, and if your protein minimum calls for you to have only 2 to 3 ounces, don't worry about it if you have a chicken breast or a chicken breast and a half, because you've fulfilled the minimum, and that's what's important. We're not worrying about going too high because it's difficult really to get too much protein, because as we've talked about before, protein has this filling effect or satiating effect, so you really can't get too much. Only worry about going too low.
That's right. Just be sure that you meet your minimum. Let's talk for a minute now about dairy products. You know, dairy products are hard cheeses, soft cheeses, curd-type cheeses, and the fluid dairy products like milk or yogurt. And there's a difference between them depending on which one you select. Hard cheese, for example, has about as much protein as lean meat. Depending on which cheese you pick, you may have anywhere from 6 to maybe even 8 grams of protein in every ounce of hard cheese. But hard cheese also has a lot of something else, and that's calories. And you have to think about that if you're small. If you're a small person, really, you know, weighting in on the cheese is going to be a problem. Now, you may not gain weight, but it's going to be tough to lose weight if you get too many calories in cheese, and it's an easy thing to overeat. So if you're on the small side, if, say, you're like I am, 5'4", 5'5", or less, you probably need to keep your intake of cheeses at about 1 ounce or 2 a day maximum. And that's really just during the correcting phase, during the intervention phase. And that's just so you won't be encouraged to overeat excess calories. Once you get into maintenance, it's not going to be a problem. You don't have to worry so much about the number of calories that are coming in. Now, if you're a big person, if you're that bodybuilder I was talking about that came into our clinic last week, the calories aren't going to make much difference. You know, if you really have an active lifestyle and you're a big person with a big lean body mass that's chewing those calories up, an ounce of cheese more or less here or there isn't going to make any difference. And so if you like it, it's a great source of protein. It's a good source of calcium and magnesium for women. And it's a good thing for you to eat as a part of your diet. You don't have to. If you're lactose intolerant, you don't have to have any of these products. What about the softer cheeses? What about cream cheese? Cream cheese certainly has protein in it, but only about 3 or 4 grams to the ounce. It's not nearly as protein-rich as hard cheese. You can use it as a part of your program, but you need to remember that it doesn't provide as much protein and has a lot more calorie load to it and a lot more carb load sometimes than regular hard cheese. Softer, curd-type cheeses like cottage cheese and ricotta cheese are really one of your best cheese bargains. 1/4 cup of cottage cheese has about the same amount of protein as an ounce of meat, about 7 grams. So, for example, if you have a 27-gram need per meal, like we were talking about earlier, then you'd have to eat, do the math for me.
That would take about 1 cup of cottage cheese.
Right, it would. It would be about 1 cup because that would give you 28 grams. Now what you have to remember about cottage cheese is that there's a little bit of carbohydrate left from the milk sugar, about 2 grams in every cup. So if you're making a protein requirement with cottage cheese and it's taking a whole cup to do it, you'll also be getting 8 grams of carbohydrate, and you're going to have to count those. If you're in phase 1 intervention, you've just about taken out your entire carbohydrate allotment for the meal in those 8 grams.
That's right, and that's the big difference between meat and dairy products, especially these curd-type dairy products. It's that the meat has zero carbohydrates, the eggs have zero carbohydrates, but the cheeses do have some carbohydrates that you need to take out and account for. So you need to be careful with that and always be aware of that.
That's right, and so if you really like cottage cheese and you want to make a quick meal out of that, that would be fine. But it really comes in handy more as a small meal or a kind of a half of a meal or a snack. A half a cup of cottage cheese, which is a pretty reasonable portion, gives you 14 grams of protein. That's plenty for a snack. And it only gives you about 4 grams of carbohydrate. And that's going to leave you enough room for some vegetable or fruit accompaniment to the cottage cheese, which to my way of thinking is very important. I'm not just a huge fan of cottage cheese all by itself. You could take that half a cup of cottage cheese and you could put it into a medium tomato, for example. That's got about 4 grams of carbohydrate in it. So those two things together, the cottage cheese stuffed into a tomato, is going to give you about an 8-gram carb load. And to me, it makes a more palatable meal. A half-cup serving would allow you to put in some fruit with the cottage cheese. For example, strawberries. When they're in season, they're so delicious. And a half a cup of strawberries only has about 3 to 3.5 grams of carbohydrate. So with the cottage cheese and the strawberries, again, you're just at about the 7.5 gram carb level, and that's perfect for a phase one intervention. And it's a great summertime meal. When the weather turns a little colder, I don't want cottage cheese so much anymore. I want heavier, more savory meals.
Well, my favorite place to eat cottage cheese is made into pancakes, and there's a delicious recipe in the workbook for using cottage cheese to make pancakes because I, too, don't really like cottage cheese a whole lot, so I don't eat a whole lot of it all by itself.
But it really is good food. It does provide a lot of protein. It's readily available. You can get it anywhere. You know, if there's a convenience store open, there's cottage cheese in it. So you can always eat it if you have to. There's one other place besides meat, eggs, or dairy products that you can get good quality protein. Where is that?
That's in tofu or these other soy-based proteins.
You know, you might be saying, tofu? I don't eat tofu. I've never eaten tofu. And you know, you don't have to. But you ought to give it a try. It's actually pretty good. When you eat tofu, if you get good extra firm tofu, you're going to have anywhere from 7 to 10 grams of protein in about a 2-ounce serving, or about a quarter of a cup serving. And that's really not a bad way to get your protein intake.
And actually, the baked stuff that you can just eat right out of the package is really pretty good. I didn't think I'd like it, but I've ended up liking it and actually use it for snacks all the time.
Now, you want to remember that tofu has no taste of its own. You have to give it a taste. When you buy it already baked, then you've got something to work with. They've already seasoned it for you. There are a couple of brands at health and nutrition stores that really are pretty tasty. And if you keep it in the refrigerator, you can use it to add to salads or to scrambled eggs or to make soup with or just to eat. And it's really, really very tasty. So you ought to give it a try if you haven't.
And when you cook this tofu with other things, it picks up the flavor of the other things. So if you saute it in, let's say, a little bit of butter and garlic, it ends up picking up that taste and it can really be good. As I say, the stuff that's already baked and ready to eat, I think is really delicious, and I use it all the time.
Along with all this protein, what else do you do? Well, you're probably going to have a little bit of carbohydrate, but you don't have to. What I want you to remember about this is that the protein requirement is absolute. You must always, always get in your protein requirement. But the carbohydrate is optional. Remember, we said earlier that of all the nutrients, the only one that we don't have any need for is carbohydrates. Your body can make all the carbohydrate you need. So if you want to have carbohydrate, depending on which stage of intervention you're in, you can have some. But if you didn't want to have a lot, say what if you wanted for dinner a steak and a green salad and that was it? Do you have to have the 7 or 10 grams of carbohydrate with your meal?
Absolutely not. You can get by just fine with the steak and the green salad.
And it's a good thing for you because that's what you'd opt for on most nights.
Well, sometimes I'd have green beans too.
The point is that on phase one intervention, you have an allotment of carbohydrates that you can spend any way you want, or not spend at all. And you've got lists in your workbook to guide you to their amounts. They're called the effective carbohydrate content list. And what these give you is a listing of the effective carbohydrate amounts, the actual starch and sugar that's available for you to use in a variety of vegetables and fruits and grain products.
And it's already calculated for you.
All the work's been taken out of it. What you probably want to do is to take a highlighter and to highlight those foods in the list that you really like and become familiar with the number of effective grams of carbohydrate contained in that portion. You know, there are a lot of things there that you would probably never touch, but highlighting those things that you really, really like and becoming familiar with the portion size for those foods will allow you to go anywhere and select foods that you can have. For example, if you just love strawberries and you were going to have, say, an omelet for breakfast and you wanted some strawberries with it, you could scale down that list and find that fresh strawberries or raw strawberries have 9.9 grams in a cup and a half. So if you wanted to take out your whole phase one intervention carbohydrate allotment just in strawberries, you could have a cup and a half of strawberries on that phase one intervention plan.
Along with your omelet, right?
Yes, always along with your protein. But maybe you don't want that. Maybe you want asparagus. Well, asparagus doesn't have nearly so many carbs. I'm not sure you could eat enough asparagus to get all 10 grams. You can have plenty of things if they're green, if they're colorful, like peppers and squashes, the cruciferous vegetables, broccoli, cauliflower, asparagus, mushrooms, all kinds of salad greens. Those are such carbohydrate bargains that you could fill up your plate with those and never get to a 10-gram limit. And if you're on phase two, your limit is even higher. You can really enjoy all those things and never get to your limit. So what you're looking at doing is to make a meal that has a protein portion. That's the cornerstone. To never, never do without that. And then combine it with a carbohydrate portion that keeps you within the limit for your intervention plan. So protein is always a minimum amount. Always get at least the minimum. Carbohydrate is a maximum. It's even optional. If you just want the chicken leg, that would be fine.
Now let me make a point here. We often see in our practice people come in who have been losing weight and they're doing fine, and then suddenly their weight loss stops. And when we start looking into it and looking at their dietary diaries to try to figure out what's going on, we find out that they've actually cut back on their protein intake, and that's a big mistake. Remember, these protein figures are minimums. Your body has to have protein. Protein can make carbohydrate. Protein can convert into fat. Fat can convert into carbohydrate. Carbohydrate can convert to fat, but nothing can convert to protein. It's got to come from the diet. And since we use protein to do all these things, to make lean body mass, to replace hair and nails that grow, skin that sloughs off, the entire inside of our GI tract that sloughs once a day, we've got to have protein to replace those things. And when we don't have enough dietary protein, our body kind of ratchets back its metabolic rate to compensate.
Right, it thinks it's in trouble.
That's right, it thinks it's in trouble. It thinks it's starving if it doesn't get enough protein. So it kind of ratchets back its metabolic rate so that you don't turn over as much protein. And when you ratchet back your metabolic rate, you stop losing weight. So if you're trying to lose weight, you need to keep your protein intake up. And a lot of people get going, and because of the way this program is structured, when they get their insulin levels lowered, they're not really hungry. And so they say, hey, I'm not really hungry, so if I eat less, I'm really going to do even a lot better. But that's not true. That isn't what happens. They actually stop their weight loss if they don't get enough protein. So you don't want to go below your protein intake or your weight loss is going to slow down.
You know, it's really curious because I'll sometimes tell these people, I want you to eat more so you'll lose better. And they look at you like you're crazy, but it's exactly true. You never, never want to not eat enough protein. Always get your protein in.
Yeah, and when somebody stopped losing weight, that's the first place we look, because that's usually what we find. They've dropped off on their protein intake.
And you know, the other thing I try to remind our patients of is to vary where they get their protein. Don't always get it as the same thing. Don't have a hamburger patty every single meal. What we want you to do is to use all the protein sources that are available to you. You know, have fish, have seafood, have wild game. In the back of the workbook, there are a number of resources for places that you can get wild game shipped right to your house if you're not a hunter. In our part of the world, people usually get their own wild game. But whatever source you use, try to vary it around. Try to get all the kinds of various proteins that you have available to you in your diet on a regular basis.
And try to chop off a lot of the visible fat, especially on beef, because it's a concentrated source of calories. The saturated fat that comes on beef, especially on grain-fed beef, is basically just a fat storage form of carbohydrate, because that's what all those cattle eat. So we like to cut off all the saturated fat that we can see, the visible fat on beef, and better yet, use free-range beef that doesn't really have a lot of visible fat and is more like wild game meat and has a higher concentration of EPA, which is a good type of fat.
You know, that's a good point, because if you can get true free-range beef and true free-range chicken, and now that's not always the case, they're sometimes not truly free-range, but if you can get a good source for those from a whole food grocery store, a natural grocery store, those are always your best options, and it's a great place to shop if you've got one around you.
And actually, they taste pretty good. I like free-range beef. It has a little bit different taste, but I actually like it better.
And while we're on the subject of lean and tasty, what about fat? You remember we told you that we want you to get good quality natural fats. And you get those from where? From nuts and seeds. Those make great snacks. From avocados. I love avocados. In fact, one of the things we like to do is to use an avocado, a half of an avocado, and put chicken salad or tuna salad or turkey or shrimp or crab salad, some other seafood salad, as the protein source into the cavity where the seed was, and drizzle a little bit of that really good quality vinaigrette over the top of it, and that is lunch. It is so good.
And we love to eat guacamole. I mean, you know, guacamole is kind of a health food. Obviously, it's made of avocado. It's got lots of good monounsaturated fats in it.
It's got garlic. It's got tomatoes.
I mean, yeah, guacamole is a great health food. The problem with guacamole and the problem with lots of dips, and really most dips are cheese-based, and you really don't get a lot of carbohydrates in those, and you get a little bit of protein. And the problem comes not in the dip, or really not in the guacamole, but in the object that you use for dipping it. And if you use corn chips or potato chips or anything like that, before you know it, you're going to be way beyond your carbohydrate limit.
In fact, a chip is about a 2-gram carb load all by itself. One chip.
That's right, all by itself. So to stay within your, say, your 10 grams per meal, you can have 5 chips. And believe me, that won't even get you started with guacamole or salsa or anything else like that. So what you can use as a substitute, and this is going to sound strange, but it works very well, and that is pork rinds. Now, you can get pork rinds at most grocery stores, and most people will blanch at the thought of pork rinds because they think, oh, there's so much fat in pork rinds. But in actuality, there is less fat in an ounce of pork rinds than there is in an ounce of potato chips or in an ounce of Doritos or any other kind of corn chips, unless they're the fat-free kind. Because basically, all these things are is a matrix of carbohydrate that just sucks up the fat when you put it in them, whereas the pork rinds are basically pig skins that are mainly protein with a little bit of fat. And when you heat them up, they expand kind of like a kernel of popcorn, and they make these fluffy things that seem to be all fat, but they're really not. They're about half protein.
And of course, the other thing that you can use for dips are the cruciferous vegetables. You can use broccoli or cauliflower to dip with. Use a cream-based dip of some kind, and those are really good. Those make great portable snacks that you can take to work or to a picnic or to kind of expand your dipping horizons just a little bit.
Well, you can actually use celery, and that really works well also.
When you're putting your plan together, all you need to remember is that you need to always get your protein intake met. Try to vary your protein sources. Eat good quality fats from nuts, seeds, olives, and avocados. Combine that with carbohydrate that you get mainly from colorful vegetables, from green leafy vegetables, from cruciferous vegetables, mushrooms, fruits, melons, and berries. And when you do that, you're going to be eating a diet that is rich in good quality nutrients, probably much more rich in nutrients than the diet you were eating before.
Plus, it's going to give you a lot of fiber. And remember, our strategy is to reduce insulin levels. And remember when we talked about earlier, this big iceberg, the big underneath part is the elevated insulin levels, and the little peaks on top are the high blood pressure and the cholesterol problems and the diabetes and all the rest. Remember, this plan that we've been talking about focuses on reducing the insulin problem. And the way you reduce the insulin problem is that you restrict the carbohydrates and keep them below this level that we've found just really by trial and error with thousands of patients finding out what works best. So you want to stay under this carbohydrate limit to keep your insulin levels down, and you want to keep your protein above, at or above the levels that you calculated in order just to replace your lean body mass and keep your metabolic rate from falling. So that's the strategy. The protein rebuilds your lean body mass and keeps your metabolic rate up. The carbohydrate restriction keeps your insulin levels down and allows the little tips of the icebergs to melt away. And what does fat do? Remember, fat is neutral as far as insulin is concerned. So we're really not worried about fat as long as we eat good quality fats. You actually need some of these fats to make things work better. What you really want to avoid is what are called trans fats, and we've talked about those before. But you get those primarily in margarine. So really, avoid margarine. That's the one food that you really need to avoid. And we tell you, you can spend your carbohydrate budget however you want on this or that. If you want potatoes, you can have a potato to get your 10 grams, but it's going to be about a quarter of a potato. But don't eat margarine, because margarine really has a bad fat in it. If you want to eat something, eat butter. Butter's probably not the best fat in the world, but it's miles ahead of margarine.
So this is going to be a program that will be tasty and filling and really easy to follow, whether you're cooking it at home or whether you're going out.
Can you eat Mexican food like this?
You bet. You just have fajitas, but you don't eat the wrappers. So now that you've got your food plan together, you want to apply that for about a week or so, really get stable on it, and then we'll couple it with exercise. And that's what's coming up right after we answer some of the most commonly asked questions about the Protein Power Plan. Next.